Today's guest is Alicia Nugent, who's been away from the recording studio for almost 11 years. She's returned now with a brand new album, The Old Side of Town. There's a lot to discuss in her absence, and this new album, which has a new sound for her. Alicia will explain that in the entire album and how it came to be. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. Thank you, Alicia Nugent, for participating in today's program. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a bluegrass version of a great song, They Don't Make Them Like Daddy Anymore, from my guest today. I'm so happy to have Alicia Nugent on Unreal Bluegrass. Hello, Alicia. How are you?
Hello, Steve. I'm doing great.
Well,
how
good.
Are you today?
I'm great. I'm so happy to have new music from you.
Thank you.
It came a while ago. I've been listening to it, and the new album is called The Old Side of Town. And it's just full of great. That was the bluegrass version. The reason I mentioned it is there's two versions of that song. The last cut is the one we just played. Is a more of a bluegrass version. I know that song has special meaning to you. But first of all, I want to say I'm so glad to hear your voice on record again after almost 11 years. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. And yes, it has been a long time. I guess during that time I wasn't sure if I would ever come back to the music, you know, but, here I am trying to put some new stuff out there and see what the response is, and hoping that, you know, everybody likes it as much as I do.
I was looking through the material that I have for the show that I've used in the past, the Hillbilly Goddess, when I was crazy about that album and the title cut.
Thank you.
And also then Little Girl in Big Lane, Four Lane Highway or whatever. I forget the full title of
Big
it.
Four Lane, yeah.
Big Four Lane. Great.
Little Girl, Big Four Lane.
And I was stunned that they were actually that, because I read the notes inside the new album. I was stunned that it was that long ago.
Yeah, I know. I mean, gosh, 11 years goes by fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, really. Really. So
yeah.
So we played the cut that I think is a personal matter to you, but let's talk a little bit about how that relates to the title cut, the one that we played, the two version of They Don't Make Them Like My Dad Anymore. I know there's stories, too. There's at least 11 years of stories that we haven't tapped before.
Yeah, so, I know. This new record really does put a lot of information out there, a lot of autobiography, is pretty much in this record, you know, because They Don't Make Them Like My Daddy Anymore, obviously. You know, this is a special song to me. You know, I wrote this with Carl Jackson, and this was the first song that was written for this record, because I knew I knew that if I had the chance to do another record, that I had to pay tribute to my dad. My dad was my biggest influence, you know, in music, and, you know, I grew up singing next to my dad, you know, since I was a kid, you know, but on stage, you know, since I was 15 years old. And, you know, of course, like the song says, you know, he shared a very important moment with me, you know, coming out on stage with me on the Grand Ole Opry on my debut and singing harmony with me, you know. And I'm just one of those girls that feels like I had the best dad in the world, you know, and I know a lot of people out there feel that way, but my dad was very special, and I had to pay tribute to him, or wanted to pay tribute, you know, on this record, and I couldn't have picked a better person than Carl Jackson, you know, to help me tell that story.
No,
and
you can't. Carl can do everything, and
has that
view from up above. As they say, like a 30,000-foot view down, he sees the whole thing, and that he's produced.
Absolutely.
I know he produced a lot of your albums in the past. He did not produce this one.
Correct.
Keith, I want to give credit where it's due. Keith Stigall, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, was your producer on this one. But yeah, it was nice of you to have Carl. Throughout, there's at least one other matter I know, that one other song that he appears on, but I'm sure he was given guidance throughout. So during this period then, when we talk about paying tribute to your father, not only were you not recording, I'm correct, right? Your father, you're paying tribute because your father's passed away in the end.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I lost my dad in 2013 to lung cancer, and, It's kind of weird how, you know, things happen, you know, but I was actually getting ready to work on my fourth album that was going to be on Rounder again, I guess probably in 2012. And Jerry Sally and I, Jerry was going to produce that record, and Jerry and I were picking out songs, you know, and at that time, my dad was diagnosed with cancer, with stage 4 cancer, and I basically I called Jerry and I called Ken Irwin, you know, and told them that I just couldn't concentrate on the record, you know, at that time. I needed to focus on family, and didn't know when I would come back to it, you know, but that was my focal point at that time. So yeah, dad passed in 2013, and you know, again, I felt like I was so separated, you know, at that point from the music, and it just kind of got bogged down in life, you know. I mean, a 40-hour week job, you know, all those kind of things, and had put down more roots in Louisiana, you know. Of course, I had 3 teenage daughters at that time, and I, you know, bought a house, and anyway, long story short, you know, I mean, life happened during that time, and I just found myself getting farther and farther away from any plans of making more music, you know. But certainly, you know, when the time came that my youngest daughter moved out of the house, and then I found myself an empty nester, you know, I was like, what do I do now? So
it gets so quiet. It gets so quiet, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So I was just kind of getting that bug, you know, of wanting to sing and wanting to play again, because I think I kind of lost that after my dad passed. You know, I felt like the person who pushed me all those years and really inspired me, you know, more than anybody else, you know, was gone, you know. So I felt like the music was gone, I guess. And so here I was now, you know, getting that bug again and wanting to make some music. And I moved back to Nashville in 2017, and I've been here trying to put together this new record ever since. So it's finally here.
I'm sorry for the passing of your father, it's a lot. As you say, when you start summing up these stories, you say life happens, but you had children and you had other issues to take care of,
right.
And so when you decide to come back to music, you've mentioned two great names, 3 actually, with Ken up at Ken Irwin at Rounder. But Carl Jackson and Jerry Sally, when you come back and want to start making music, who do you contact? Or you have all these great connections from the past as far as, I think I might want to put something in the studio again. Where do you start?
Well, I mean, obviously, I call these guys friends. You know, I've known Carl and Jerry for about 27, 28 years. And so, obviously, when I got back to town, you know, I'm calling these guys, just letting them know that I'm back, you know. And, of course, the first thing out of anybody's mouth, you know, is usually, well, are you recording again? What are you doing? You know, and I'm like, well, I did talk to Ken Irwin before coming back to Nashville, and, you know, he explained to me that, you know, too much time had passed. You know, the contract was pretty much null and void, you know, at that point. And, you know, and of course, the music industry had changed quite a bit, you know, since I'd been gone. So he didn't see it, you know, as a possibility, you know, for me to come back and record, because I was supposed to have done 5 records on Rounder and I only did 3. So anyway, I didn't really know at that point. Like, I was taking a chance just moving back to Nashville, because I was like, I don't have a record deal anymore. Sure, I still have the contacts, but it takes money to go in the studio. And I didn't know how that was going to happen. You know, I just kind of, you know, showed up in Nashville on a prayer that it would somehow happen again for me. And that opportunity came about from a gentleman that I met at the Station Inn one night. I was out there, or I was in the Station Inn, listening to Carl Jackson and Larry Cordell and some others that were there on stage that night. And
that's usually their Sunday or Monday. They have a regular
Monday
night. Yeah, Monday night.
Yeah. Monday night they would do the new Monday with Val Story.
Yeah.
And so I was actually there that night, and they asked me to get up and sing a couple of songs with them, you know, and I did. And when I came to sit back down, this gentleman that was in the audience came to me, you know, and said, "Are you the same Alicia Nugent that recorded Paper and Pen?" And I said, "Yes."
I remember that one too. Yeah.
So basically, long story short, you know, we got to talking, and he ended up offering me a job to work for his company, and so, you know, he's such a big supporter of bluegrass and classic country music, you know, and he's like, I just want to support this kind of music, you know. He was financially capable of doing that, and he just offered to fund the record for me. You know, he said, if you're not making new music, you know, if money's the reason why, he's like, I got you covered. So that was quite the blessing, you know, and I call it a blessing because that's pretty much a godsend for
it
me.
Is,
you know.
So it is for anybody. So, well, okay, so from that moment, if you're tuning in now, I'm talking to, I really enjoyed talking to Alicia Nugent about her new album, The Old Side of Town. So from that moment, you've uh-huh. moved back to Nashville, and now you have this opportunity. So then how long does it take you to come up with the concept of what you want to do, because we're going to talk about this album, and then actually get it put together?
Well, I mean... That was actually 2 years ago that we started talking about this, you know, and of course, you know, it does take time. But, I mean, I knew immediately, you know, that, well, after a couple of meetings, I guess, you know, with him, you know, he wanted me to do the kind of record that I wanted to do. And I said, you know, this may be my last chance to record, you know, it possibly could. So... I've always wanted to do a classic country record. You know, I love steel guitar and fiddle. And we sadly don't get to hear that on mainstream radio today.
No.
So, you know, and I guess because I was a little discouraged, you know, by the response that I got on the Hillbilly Goddess record. You know, I felt like that was my best work
fantastic.
As far as a bluegrass record went. Mm-hmm. You know, I even had J.D. Crowe playing banjo on Hillbilly Goddess, you know. And to not get the response that I thought, you know, it should have had, I was like, well, you know what? I'm not making this next record a bluegrass record. I'm going to make a country record. And of course, you know, paying tribute to my dad on that one song, you know, my dad was a huge bluegrass fan as well, you know, so I felt like it was the only right to have a bluegrass version of his song. But yeah, it didn't take very long, I guess, to decide. After a couple of meetings, he and I decided, you know, I mean, he basically wanted me to do the record that I wanted and, you know, put that trust in me that I, as an artist, you know, knew what a good record would sound like. And, you know, the next step from there was, you know, let's pick the producer that you want, you know. And it's funny because we started out with a guy, well, I probably shouldn't add this to the interview, but we started out with this guy that was from LA and came to Nashville to produce. And basically, It was horrible. He started out with some pre-production stuff, you know, and he had like these, he was doing the bass with like the keyboard, and he was doing like some kind of shakers, and he was doing everything basically through a computer.
That's
instead of having like a live band tracking, you know. And I was like, no, this is not going to happen. I will not have a record like this, you know. So I told him he needed to go back to L.A.
And you did not mean Louisiana.
Not Louisiana.
You meant L.A., exactly. California.
Exactly.
All right.
So, you know, so we started over with, you know, the guy that was funding the record, you know, he says, look, he said, pick the producer that you want, you know. And he and I kind of mentioned a few names together, you know, sitting there in the meeting. And of course, Keith Stegall, you know, was right there at the top of the list because actually our first option, because, you know, I love Alan Jackson's older stuff, mm-hmm. you know, but I love Alan Jackson, period.
Yeah.
And the production that Keith has done, you know, I've always thought that he's done such a great job. And so we called him up and set up a meeting, and he accepted right there, and I was like, wow. So, you know, from there on, you know, we started writing songs, and Keith set up a lot of meetings with, you know, songwriters that I never could have had the chance to write with, like Roger Murrah and, oh my gosh, James LeBlanc, and, you know, it was just, it was great. Paul Overstreet, you know, I had some great writing opportunities. So yeah, we started writing for the record, and the rest is history, pretty much.
It, you know, you tipped your hand a little bit, and I will tell the audiences too. This is, and we did start off with the bluegrassy version of "They Don't Make 'Em Like My Daddy Anymore." But this is a great, great country album in the sense that I'm thinking. Maybe the term is classic country. I don't know how those dividers go anymore, but there's a nice syrupy pedal steel. There's a big like on the opening song, which I want to talk about Tom Hall and Dixie a little bit, because that's the title cut.
Because he has the title cut.
Yeah, the title cut, the old side of town. There's just a great, you think, yeah, that's like great, great country singing. Your voice is so big and powerful.
And
I want to ask you, and I don't want to go too far before I forget this, to ask you about what do you think your approach to singing has changed, if at all, over the last 11 years. But first I want to get into Tom Hall and Dixie Hall, two of my favorite people on the planet. I told you before we went on the air that I'm just a kid from Kentucky, ultimately, and that, you know, if you can talk about Tom T. Hall anytime, that's a good idea to me. But the story, not just the song and the title cut, but the story with Tom and Dixie Hall, there's more to it. I think it's a fascinating story, and then I want to move on and play another tune. But talk about that for a minute.
Okay. Well, you know, I worked for Tom T. and Dixie for 5 years. I was basically their housekeeper. And this was about, let's see, 2004. Yeah, 2004 was when I started working for them. And, of course, this was in the midst of me putting out records on Rounder, you know, and trying to tour. And Mark Newton actually got me the job, or got me the interview with Tom T and Miss Dixie. And they, you know, the 5 years that I worked for them, I mean, they always treated me like family. I mean, from the get-go, the very first day that they interviewed me and talked to me about the position, you know, they said, "Now, Alicia, you know, you're in the music business, and, you know, we're in the music business, and obviously we need you here, you know, to help us out around the house, but your music always comes first, you know, and that's, you know, that's your career. This is a job." And Mr. Tom T said, "You know, you let us know when you have to be out there playing on the road. You just mark it on the calendar. Tell us when you're going to be gone. And when you come home, you've got a place to come home to."
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, they even like put me up in one of the apartments, you know, that's on their property, so that I would be really close. And of course, that was at Miss Dixie's convenience, because she'd call me at 9 p.m. You know, when little creatures were running through the house or something, and she couldn't do anything about it. She'd call me and say, "Can you please come help?"
She was so funny. I got a chance to have both of them on the show several years ago, and I still, one of my favorite conversations in the world was with, and you have to say Tom T and Miss Dixie. That's the only language that people will understand. I had so much fun chatting with them. It was such a good time. But so what? Well, what a great comfortable place to be then for you, and that they recognized you were doing music, and of course you're with the, you know, maybe some of the greatest songwriting, some of the greatest songs ever
absolutely.
Written in that duo right there. The title cut. Then so why did you choose that? There's so many different kinds of music. To the listeners, I want them to understand, there's great big country sounds. There's sad sounds. There's a Texas swing. To me, I pick up and tell them in Fort Worth I said hello or whatever. But
right.
let's start with the title cut, and then we're going to cut to another one. We're going to get the feel of the album as a whole. But when you select the title cut for an album, what's the? I don't get that process because I don't do it.
Well, you know, to me, selecting a title cut is basically, you know, kind of going through all the material that you've got, that you've selected on this album, and trying to decide, is there a theme? Is there one song or not even necessarily the title of a song, but maybe just a line in the song that kind of pays tribute to the theme of the whole album, you know? You know, like, I remember before we decided The Old Side of Town, Keith Stegall said, this album should be Sad Songs and Waltzes, but Keith Whitley's already done that.
Oh, that would be good.
So, he said, maybe we should just title it Sad Songs, you know, but, of course it wasn't, it's not all sad songs, but...
Oh, gosh, no.
Yeah, but, you know, when Keith and I were talking about doing a Tom T. Hall song for the record, you know, I picked The Old Side of Town, actually not even thinking about it being the title cut of the record, but I've always loved that song of Tom T.'s. You know, to me, it's just one of his classics, and it probably doesn't get as much recognition as, you know, so many of the others, you know, but I've always loved this song, and it's actually kind of hard to sing. You know, it's one of the rangier songs, you know, and Keith thought it was a great idea, and of course, after we cut everything, and Keith and I were talking about, you know, the title track, you know, I said, you know, we need something on here that's, or I need a line, you know, that says this record is old. I mean, this is old country music, you know, I mean, there's lots of steel, lots of fiddle, you know, and he's like, Alicia, The Old Side of Town.
There you go.
And I said, oh my gosh. I said, but can I do that? Can I take a Tom T. Hall song and make it my title track? And he said, absolutely. He said, you're trying to pay homage to Tom T. and Dixie anyway, because
sure,
they, you know, they're like family to me. And I said, oh, I would love that, because to me the record says, you know, like, I'm coming from the old side of town, you know.
It is, and the way you do that, it's a big, I don't want to say produced, but I mean, of course, the whole thing's produced, but in other words, I don't want to make it sound like a show tune, but I mean, it's got a lot of nice, powerful fiddle, and there's all kinds of steel all throughout the album. Your vocal is so big and powerful in that, and I can hear the range. That's one of the ones I'll play that song before we get to this interview part in the first hour of the show, so people can get a feeling.
Okay.
But so then your vocal, I asked you a little bit about what effect or change, or just what have you noticed in your approach to something like that, which hits just a great range that maybe you wouldn't have done 11 years ago.
Well, you know, when I go back and listen, it's funny because I'm one of those artists that I can't hardly stand to listen to my own voice, you know, on recordings. And I especially can't stand to hear, like, my very first record, the Alicia Nugent record with Paper and Pen, and, you know, I can't stand to listen to it, you know. And I think it's mostly because I feel like my voice was still very, very, very high and pitchy, and not pitchy, but it's like I sounded so, I had no finesse. I guess that's the word that I'm looking for.
Well, and I think you're going right to where I think you should go. Not that I haven't known anything about singing, but I think that what you have now, and I'm not a music critic at all, right? But I think you have a more full use of the instrument that you have. And I think that you take advantage of the full vocal range that you have, and not only just adjusting how loud you sing or don't sing, but the feeling and everything else. So maybe you're hitting in that same direction as you're discussing that particular cut.
Yeah, I mean, I think back in those days, you know, I mean, gosh, I recorded the first record, you know, 20 years ago, and I look back and, you know, also going back to that whole life happens thing, you know, I mean, I think that I needed to live more to get to this point of even reaching the maturity in my voice, you know, because back then, I mean, I was always like a raw singer, you know, just very, my dad always taught me, you know, just sing loud and proud, you know, I mean, if you're not singing loud, then you're not, you know, you're not singing. And I mean, that was his way, but, and it just always sounded very raw. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I feel like I was always concentrating more on my vocals than I was on feeling the song and trying to deliver the song and what it said. And I think once life happens a little bit more and you mature, you know, and you feel those songs so much more, then certainly, you know, that I think that shows.
I think so. And you know, every recorded song, not just every recorded album, but every recorded song is just a snapshot of what's happening then around you.
Absolutely.
So if you reload the camera, 11 years difference, it's going to be different. And it's wonderful. This is, and I told you this off the air too, there are so many great songs. There are high power tunes that should be on a great country radio station. There are the sad songs. There are the, there's like I said, the Texas swing feel, which is great.
Thank you.
And your voice has tackles all of those, and they're all, you aren't just singing loud because you can. I'm not suggesting that you ever did that, but I think you're now thinking about those lyrics with a different ears involved. So all that having been said, let's introduce another song for the listeners.
Okay.
I want you to walk us into I Might Have One Too. We'll play that cut, and then I'll come back and talk to you some more.
Well, this is a song that was written by Aaron Enderlin and my dear friend Larry Cordell. Larry pitched this song to me, gosh, probably as soon as I came back to town, and this is just one of those that stuck in my mind, and I loved the demo that I heard, you know, had that steel guitar on the front, and immediately I was like, oh, shoot me now. You know, I mean, the steel guitar is enough for me on this song, but then you add those lyrics, and you know, Tom T, when he was one of the first people that heard this whole record before anybody else, and he called me after he listened to it two or three times, and he said that track number two called I Might Have One Too is the best country song I've heard in 15 years.
Boy, that's saying a lot, but I would have to agree. That's saying a mouthful.
It is. It is. And, I mean, I had to call Larry Cordell and sent Aaron Enderlin a message, and I said, y'all are not going to believe what Tom T. Hall just said about your song. I said, but I have to tell you, you know. But he said, you know, he said, most country songs, you know, have been written. He said, this is the first time I've heard this song, you know. And he meant lyrically, he'd never heard that concept before. And he just thought that it was brilliant.
Yeah, I do too. I love it. Well, I'm talking to Alicia Nugent. We're talking about the brand new album, The Old Side of Town. We had a nice discussion to this part. She's introduced to you perfect intro from Alicia into I Might Have One Too from that album. We're going to listen to that, and I'm going to come back and talk to Alicia Nugent some more. So hold on just a second. There it is. There's the song that we just heard. I might have one too. If Tom T. Hall says it's the best country song in 15 years, that's a lot. It has all those great elements, but boy, you do these. There's so many great tempos. I've mentioned before the Tellman Fort Worth. I said hello. That's an entirely different. That's a Texas swing, and it should be.
It's a Texas shuffle.
Okay. Thank you. It's better.
Yeah. No. It's okay. And we wrote it when I wrote this with Larry Cordell and Kevin Denny. You know, Kevin is a big hit in Texas. He's a Kentucky boy, but he sings real country music and, you know, a lot of Texas type stuff. You know, and they love him down there. But we wrote this song. You know, I mean, I went in that day saying, okay, guys, I'm doing a classic country record, and I do not have a Texas shuffle on this record yet. And I love Ray Price. You know, I love that old I love those old country shuffles like that. And I said, you know, I don't want to go back and pull an old country shuffle. I want to write one. And Larry Cordell said, well, honey, why didn't you say so? He said, we can write a country shuffle. So Kevin Denny had the idea of Tell Fort Worth I Said Hello, and we ran with it. And I couldn't be happier. I just think that it's it's a mix of Ray Price and Connie Smith, you know.
You know what? When you mentioned Ray Price, that's the perfect frame of mind to listen to a lot of these songs. That's the country period. That's the classic country or whatever term. That's the period when this album absolutely.
And you're not recreating.
You're not imitating. This is just kills right in that area. And thank you. And I just think, wow, it's a great. So much about it is so great. There's a lot of those really. That's just kind of a nice upbeat tune. There's not all happiness on this album, and we don't mean to mention that the song about your father was happy, but you know, Way Too Young for Wings. There's some songs on here that'll just pull you right down.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, after writing the song about my dad, you know, that, and I know we're not going to play this song, you know, but Way Too Young for Wings is another personal story of, you know, that kind of tells a little bit more to my fans of what I went through during those 11 years that I was gone. You know, that's a song that was written for my daughter because she lost the first love of her life, you know, her high school sweetheart. Was killed in a car accident. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I wanted to write that for her. And so that's what that song is for, you know, but it just kind of adds to, you know, the daddy song and a little more of, you know, some of what I went through during those times back home.
You have, talk a little bit about, if you would, Sad Song itself, a song that you wrote entitled Sad Song. Just we're going to talk a little bit more about the album coming to life, but we'll get to a song before we leave. One of my favorite tunes on it as we're leaving, I'll play, but we're not there yet. Talk a little bit about a couple other cuts on the album.
Well,
Sad Song. Sad Song is a place.
Sad Song, yeah. That's one that I wrote with Keith Stegall and Roger Murrah. And what an honor, you know, to be able to be in the same room with those guys. You know, they're giants of songwriters, and you know, Sad Song was again my idea. You know, kind of coming from a personal story. I divorced 20 years ago. March of 2021 will be 20 years, and you know, the music business has a lot to do with that divorce and trying to be a woman in the music business with three daughters and being divorced, you know, was quite a road for me. You know, it was a tough road. And, you know, just I had to write something, you know, that kind of talked about my divorce, you know, in this. You know, you learn so much, especially in, you know, 20 years. And so that's another personal one. And really, really proud of that one. I probably contributed more on that song than any of the other ones that I co-wrote on this record. So,
well, let me, only because it follows on the album listing and the way I have it anyway, then this tune halfway, I don't know, I wouldn't say that it makes me chuckle, makes me smile. The song that follows that is I Thought He'd Never Leave.
Well, I have a funny story about
okay,
that.
Okay, good, because I like it.
So it's like, yeah, Sad Song brings you way down,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Talks about the divorce, you
yeah.
know, and then I Thought He'd Never Leave.
That's exactly right.
To pick us back up again,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
So, you know, this song actually came about because, again, I was writing with Roger Murrah and Keith Stegall, and on a different day, but this was my first time writing with Roger and my first time meeting Roger. And he's like Keith Stegall's mentor, you know. I mean, he mentored Keith in the beginning of his career. And so as Roger and I are sitting there in Keith's office, you know, we're just kind of getting to know each other a little bit, you know, asking questions about each other's life, you know, whatever. And Keith gets a phone call and leaves the room. And as he walks out, Roger leans over toward me and he says, "I thought he'd never leave." and of course, I just chuckled and, you know, thought it was so funny. And I said, "Hey, there's our song." And he goes, "What?" I said, there's our song. I said, it could be another one of those Brad Paisley comedy songs, like, you know, what's the song you did about, well, I'm going to miss her.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, this is perfect, you know. I said, we need something that's going to add a little humor to the record anyway. So, I mean, it's meant to be a great song.
It's a great transition from sad song, for sure. Do you? Here's another question I always have of artists and writers: the lineup on the album. Did you do that on purpose? It just happened to work out that way in that particular instance. Or when you line up songs on an album, what's your intent?
It's absolutely on purpose. Yeah, I mean, I put a lot of thought into the order of the songs, you know, and just like we were just talking about, you know, like bring everybody way down on sad song, you know, and then okay, I'm like, okay, I got to pick them back up again, you know. So my thought for having I Thought He'd Never Leave as what I thought at that time was going to be the closing track, you know, before we decided to do the bonus track on the record. To me, that was going to be the song to close out the record, and it has a long outro, you know, and it gives me a chance to really let the guys in the band, you know, jam out, you know, and show their talents. And it's just, to me, it's just a feel-good way to end the whole record, you know. And I loved being able to showcase those guys, you know. So, I mean, you know, The Old Side of Town, to me, it had to start with that, mm-hmm. because that's the title of the record, and it kind of sets the pace, you mm-hmm. know. And yeah, everything else, the way it follows, I mean, is absolutely on purpose, and you know, it's to pick you up and bring you back down again.
it does just that. Your music is on Hillbilly Goddess, which I guess is that the label that...
That's my label.
That's your label.
That's my
okay.
label. Uh-huh.
Before I forget, how do people find it? I found it because I opened my mail, thank goodness. tell people how they find The Old Side of Town by Alicia Nugent.
They can find it on my website, alicianugent.com, and Alicia spelled A-L-E-C-I-A.
Right.
But alicianugent.com, they can order it through there. You know, it's $15 for the CD, and then I add $5 in for shipping and handling. And, you know, unless you're overseas, of course, you know, shipping and handling is a little more expensive. But that's pretty much it. I mean, they can buy it directly from me. And, you know, they can even shoot me an email through the website. And if they would like it personalized and autographed, whatever,
nice.
You know, be happy to do that, too.
Are you, and I cannot make it this out, you're holding, my first thought may be on the album cover, you're holding an album cover or a photograph?
I'm holding an album cover. It's
what
actually,
is that?
It's a Don Williams album.
I thought I recognized his hat, but I sure couldn't read what it was about.
Yeah, and you know what's funny about, and not many people know this really doesn't come up in the interviews, but that photo, all of my photos that are done for the record, except for the very back, were done in Tom T. Hall's house.
Oh, okay.
So not only is the title track, you know, and paying homage to Tom T. and Miss Dixie, you know, on the title track of the song, but this picture was taken in Tom T. Hall's music room upstairs in his home in Franklin, Tennessee.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, we were, when I was talking to the photographer about, you know, what kind of props and things like that, you know, that I wanted for the photo shoot, I mentioned to him that since the title of the record was The Old Side of Town, you know, and it's obviously classic country music, you know, I said, I want to have a photo of me with my record player sitting in a room, and I've got all these old country records like laid out on the floor in front of me, and maybe even holding one, whatever, and you know, like just that kind of picture.
Okay.
And that's what this is. That's where that came from.
Okay.
You know, I'm looking out the window, you know, propped up against the wall in Tom T's music room, And so you can't see, they had to close in on the picture, but you can't see that, like, just to the right of my feet, there are, there's a record player, an old-time record player, and then there's, like, Ricky Skaggs and Vern Gosden and all these other country records spread out all over the floor.
Yeah, I can see the beginning of that, and you're right, it's cropped around your feet, but you can see a little bit. Okay, so that, and I kept, you know, that hat looked familiar, and I could not figure out what you were holding in your hand. Oh, that makes sense now.
And plus, that's the Don Williams record.
Plus, that's, again, the perfect reference point for the type of music that you're doing now, as far as in this album. It's just that perfect time, that the stuff he did and everything that you're doing now. Now, all these wonderful things about the album, I love it so much. I love this album. We're going to introduce as the last cut that we talk about. I play it. I think this is an absolutely, it's upbeat. To me, this should fit anywhere on any radio station that was around anymore, and I'm talking about Too Bad You're No Good. I absolutely love this, everything about this song.
Thank you. Yeah, this is another one that I didn't write on the record, but Paul Kraft, what a great songwriter. You know, Paul Kraft and Cadillac Bob Holmes wrote this song, and this was pitched to me, you know, as from someone who knew that I was doing a classic country record. And you know, this song sounds more like it comes from the 90s country era than like the Ray Price and Don Williams era. But
or even the late 60s, early 70s kind of what we would now call Americana or Southern rock or something like that. So you're right. That the timing of that exactly as you say.
Yeah. I mean this song in particular, you know, to me it sounds more like something that you would have heard. To me, it kind of sounds like a bluegrass.
Could be.
Has that bluegrass sound to it, you know, especially with the mandolin, the way it kicks it off.
Yeah, exactly,
you know?
And terrific and beat. Terrific beat. Boy, it just pounds.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you like it. That's definitely one of my favorites.
Oh, good. Because that's one that I was hoping you would pick. I let every artist pick out three, and I was hoping... I was trying to send you mental images that you would pick that song to lead into as we say goodbye. Alicia Nugent, this has been, I'm so glad to hear your voice, not just on the radio, but I'm so glad to have more recorded music from Alicia Nugent to talk about on the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your support and playing it. And, you know, I'm just, I love the music. I missed it, you know, all those years. And I hope I get to get out there and promote it some, you know, venues open back up.
Yeah,
so we'll
I hope so soon. That'd be great. So let's do that. Let's thank you, Alicia Nugent. We've been talking about the Old Side of Town, great album that you can find on her website. She's giving you all that good information. But so many great songwriters, so many great stories, so many different feels in the bonus track of the bluegrass version of the song. That is about her father. They don't make him like daddy anymore. It's a wonderful thing we're going to play. Too Bad You're No Good. And thank you again, Alicia, for all your time and effort.
Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. I will catch you hopefully when these venues open up.
Sounds good. Okay. Thanks a lot, friend.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.